Music, it's not just part of our daily lives, it's part of our wrestling fandom as well, and it has been for decades. That's where this show comes in. Music of the Mat, the podcast devoted exclusively to the music of pro wrestling, hosted by Andrew Rich. Hey, that's me. Each episode delivers a different topic with a variety of great guests, fun conversations, musical analysis, and of course, a heartfelt pun or two. New episodes drop every other Tuesday on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or your podcast app of choice. Check out Music of the Mat only on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
My music.
You're listening to Music of the Mat on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to Music of the Mat, the podcast devoted exclusively to the music of pro wrestling. It's all part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. I'm your host, Andrew Rich. This is episode 154, and it's a Music Memories episode. And today I'm joined by a returning guest here on the show. They are a contributor at Voices of Wrestling. It's John Carroll. Hello, John.
Am I a contributor, Andrew? What did I contribute?
You've written some reviews. You've written some reviews here and there, I think.
I did the G1 show with Juice and David Finlay. I really don't remember doing anything else in 2022. It may have literally been that one show, but yeah, contributor. Oh, I did also do the Wrestling Omakase episode where I like took a very obnoxious victory lap about Naito getting into the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame. I forgot.
You? A victory lap on Naito? You of all people? I'm shocked by this whole thing.
It was really surprising. Yeah. But yeah, so those are my two contributions for 2022. So I can continue being a Voices of Wrestling contributor.
Yes, yes. Well, it's actually been a while since you've been on this show here. I think last time you were on was before the pandemic even. That's how long ago it was. Wow. But we did see each other at Forbidden Door last year in the suite. That was a lot of fun there. And yeah, this is your big return to the podcast. So hurrah.
Hurrah. What was my last episode? Was it like, did we do Dragon Gate Units or something?
No, that was your first episode, the Heel Units. Your last one was, I believe, Jamming Around Japan, number one. That was, a couple years ago. And since then,
You were on Omakase more recently than that, though.
Yeah, last time I did that show, it was the five matches where you picked right, two, right, I picked right. two, and there was a fan vote for the fifth one. So,
yeah.
But
that was fun.
It was, yeah. I mean, again, last time you were on here, you have since, I guess, shut it down, gone on hiatus. What's the state of the podcast at this point? Is it gone for good now? Or
I don't
or
think
what?
I've done with it for good. I mean, I brought it back like what, three months ago, whenever Naito got in the Hall of Fame, just to do that one episode. So I think that's kind of what I'm going to do from now on is like, if I ever really want to talk about something, I can get a guest together really quickly. I'm not like retired, but it's never going to be like, I don't think it'll ever be like a regular thing again. The problem is I travel way too much now. I remember I had a different podcast idea, not Omakase, but like a different podcast idea for like a weekly podcast. I brought it up to Nicole, you know, my partner who I was interested in doing this. And she looked at me like I had five heads and she was like, why the hell? Fuck, would you do that? And she was like, not at all into the idea of me doing a weekly podcast again. And I get it, because it is like, it's one of these things that, like, when you have, you know, when you live with somebody else, like, podcasting weekly kind of is a burden on them too, because it's like, well, you, especially when you live in an apartment, you know, where it's like, well, this is like an hour and a half to 3 hours where, like, you know, every week where I have to take the bedroom and cannot be bothered, basically. And never mind the fact that we, like I said, we travel a lot now and it's like doing it around a travel schedule is kind of weird. I've done podcasts on location before. I did it in Japan, I believe twice. I think we did it in Japan. Not the third trip, but the other two trips. But yeah, and it's fun, but it's also like a lot of, you know, you have to bring the equipment with you, at least the microphone. And you do this microphone I have, the Blue Snowball, I've gotten every time I try to bring it in a like a carry-on bag, they always stop me and like take my whole bag apart because they're like, what the fuck is this? Like every single time I've taken it with, and it's not even just Japan, because I've taken it with me, like we did like an on location episode with the G1 in Dallas show, I think.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And like every time I travel with this microphone, the TSA guy like picks my bag aside and they're like, there's something in here. They didn't know what the hell it was. And I was like, oh yeah, it's a microphone probably. And they pulled it. It's like, this is a microphone? It's like, yes, it's a microphone. So, you know, travel, even, that's an added pain in the ass. And yeah, I don't know. Even pre-check people don't like that microphone for some reason. But yeah, so I don't, I guess it's a very long-winded way to say, I don't know. We'll bring it back when we bring it back, I guess. But I doubt we'll ever be a weekly podcast again, especially when I was doing the Patreon. It's like, man, that felt like a job. Like that really got to the point where it felt like I had a second job. So I don't think I'll ever do that again. But
yeah, I never considered doing one for this show ever because, I mean, you know, an episode once every 2 weeks is more than enough work for me with this thing because, you know, a lot goes into it. And I got real life, I got work, I got stuff I want to read and watch and whatnot. So yeah, it'd be too much. It'd be too much for me to do. So I never considered it at all, really.
Yeah, it was a lot. I mean, it was nice making actual money
from the yes.
podcast for the first time. That was cool. But like when I came right down to it, I'm like, I am busting my ass for this money. I'm like, I'm not trying to sound like Richie Rich here, but I was like, do I really need this money? Not really. So it's like, I think I'm good. So yeah, I've enjoyed having my free time back. I will say that. So,
mm-hmm. Well, I mean, you're also busy with hockey as well. Because it's like every night it seems you're either watching on TV or going to MSG or whatever. And you're just sending out 1,000 tweets about, you know, this game and that game. And, oh, this O-line doesn't look good. Or we got to score here, guys. Come on now. And I see these tweets and it's like, you know, I just smile and wave and keep on moving. Because it's not my area of expertise at all. But it is yours and you love it. So good for you, man.
What is funny is, so I had like three periods where now I pretty much tweet about hockey and wrestling, right? I guess, because it's like I still tweet about wrestling plenty. I mean, I had a bunch of tweets about this New Beginning show, and I still, you know, I tweet about Dynamite and stuff. But originally, my Twitter account was a hockey account. So when I went really hard in on wrestling in like what, like the mid 2010s, all the hockey people who didn't unfollow me were probably doing exactly what you did, scrolling past these wrestling tweets. Like, I don't know what this means. I don't know what this means. Good for you, though. And now I've gone, like you said, more hard in on the hockey again. You know, and like I said, I tweet about wrestling too, but like hockey and wrestling. So I'm sure all the people that follow me for wrestling tweets are like, what the fuck is this? So should I just make two different Twitter accounts? Probably. Am I too lazy to do that? Yes. So I just tweet about hockey and wrestling on my Twitter account. But yeah, I do go to, I have New York Rangers like quarter season tickets. And I go to additional games besides that. And I also am a big LA Kings fan. So having two favorite teams, you know, I'm always going to like Kings games when they come to the East Coast. So it is a lot of games, but I love hockey.
I'm just picturing like 2015 or so, some hockey guy looking at your timeline and being like, John's tweeting about this Danshoku Dinu fellow. Is he like an obscure Japanese hockey player I don't know about? Let me Google him real quick. Oh my God.
I'm sure something like that probably happened. I mean, I would sometimes retweet like particularly nasty looking gifs, like usually like Joshi ones are the ones that always would get the reactions, and I get like a random hockey person would DM me and be like, are these girls really doing, like this happened like three times where someone would DM me and is like, is this real? And I was like, yeah, they drop each other on their heads a lot, what do you want me to tell you? So they it's always the Joshi ones that get that reaction. But yeah, no wrestling fans ever DM me like, are you sure you're okay with what I'm tweeting about hockey? Because I do get pretty fired up, but especially about refereeing, because the officiating in the NHL is atrocious. But anyway, not a hockey podcast. So
no. But anyway, John, we are here to do another Music Memories episode. And for those that may not know, Music Memories is when I have on a guest to talk about three memories from their wrestling fandom that are strongly linked to music in some way. It could be a wrestler's theme, a tag team or stable theme, could be a TV or pay-per-view theme, could be from a game, could be from an album, a movie or show about wrestling perhaps, whatever it may be. And it's not about analyzing the music like we normally do in the show. It's more of a casual conversation about these songs and about these memories and whatnot and why you picked them. It's actually kind of like, John, again, the Pick 5 Matches episodes that you would do on Omakase back in the day, where it's not about, you know, we have to review this, we have to review that. No, it's about personal choice and personal preference and why you like this stuff. So, yeah, it's kind of in that spirit, I guess, there, John.
Were you inspired by me, Andrew? Is that what you're telling me?
Well, listen, I mean, I have many influences in my life. Come on now.
Okay. I always loved doing the Five Matches episodes. I mean, they were a lot of fun. Nobody listened to them is the problem. but I mean, like, when I look through the listener metrics, they, you know, retro stuff in general doesn't do as well. But, like, I enjoyed them a lot because it was a lot of fun just to, like, pick matches and talk about why you like them and that kind of thing. And sometimes you do like booby picks. Like I remember when I had Brian on from used to be Street Fight, and I picked Sandman versus Sabu from November to Remember 97 because it's a famously horrible match, but I thought it also kind of fit his old vibe. I mean, we had a lot of fun with it because it's like, really, if you want to watch two people like fall off of ladders repeatedly and like not know what's going on, probably on many different drugs during that match, that is the match for you. Cause it's like not fall off in a cool way. Just like they set up a spot. Cause I realized falling off the ladders could sound cool. It's not cool, to be clear. Like they would set up a spot and the ladder would just kind of like tip over while in the middle of climbing it. And this would happen like, I don't know, like 50 times in a 15 minute match. So that was a fun one.
Well, let's get to it then. John, what is your first music memory for us?
Okay, so my first pick is the CM Punk theme song from back in the day in the Ring of Honor, Miseria Can't Tear, The Beginning by AFI. So I picked this pretty much. I was definitely going to pick when you came to me with this whole pitch for this Music Memories episode. I was definitely going to pick something from my days attending Ring of Honor, you know, mostly in the front row, I should say. So if I ever want to remember what I looked like in 2004, I have many options to choose from. But yeah, I mean, so I wanted to pick something from that time. My first thought was to pick a Special K theme song from that period, which was Victim of Hardstyle, I believe. But yes, then you informed me that rotten Joe Gagne got to it before I could. The no good scoundrel, who also was attending lots of Ring of Honor shows around the same time up in Boston. I was attending them, of course, I don't know, the Northeast Corridor, I guess you'd say. I went to pretty much all the Philly shows, definitely all the New Jersey shows, and then, you know, all the New York City shows. I made an occasional appearance in Connecticut or Long Island before my buddy and I kind of decided, you know, are these shows worth the trip, you know? At a certain point, anyone who was following Ring of Honor at that point could tell you that those Connecticut and Long Island shows were kind of B shows, and they were the longest trips we would take, basically, from where we were at the time in New Jersey. So, you know, we kind of ended up doing them less and less, but we did do them for a little while. But yeah, so I went to all those kind of shows, and, you know, so if I wasn't going to, I didn't, you told me I could have done Victim of Hardstyle, but I wanted to do, you know, a different song. And, you know, I was a huge CM Punk mark back in the day. I loved punk. It was like, it's kind of funny now because I am definitely not straight edge at all, but you know, as a 17 to 19 year old at the time, I was like, you know what? I tried drinking in ninth grade and almost threw up. That sucked. I'm going to go straight edge now. And that did not last very long until after I turned 21. It pretty much was done immediately. But yes, I was influenced by CM Punk at the time in that regard. So I was like very into this whole straight edge thing. And he just seemed really cool at the time, right? Like he has this theme song, which is like, you know, it sounds like kind of dark and spooky, but not like in a corny way. And, you know, the entire thing plays for his entrance, which was like a very unique thing at the time. It's like I think just under 3 minutes, the song length. So, and he's a guy who, much like someone we'll be talking about later, would let quite a bit of a play before he came out, which just made him feel like an even bigger deal. And of course, you know, back in the day, sitting in the front row, you know, the barricade slapping, as it was, his theme song was by far the most fun to barricade slap in time too. And yeah, just really like, if I hear that song, even though I'm not, you know, it's not really like my style of music in general. Like I'm not listening to AFI on my in a non-wrestling context, but like, if I hear that song, it will instantly transport me to like, you know, all these venues in the Northeast and seeing CM Punk come out and just him feeling like the absolute biggest star in wrestling to me at that point. And, you know, I was really, really behind him in that feud with Samoa Joe. So the other, like the big, if I had to like distill it down, this theme song to one specific memory, it would definitely be being in the Rexplex in Elizabeth, New Jersey. I believe November 2004, I could have the month wrong, it could have been December. But for the third Samoa Joe versus CM Punk match after the 2 60-minute draws, which was a pretty incredible match. I've always thought it was really underrated. They told the story with Punk like bleeding a gusher pretty much right out the bat and that kind of being his downfall. You know, I just remember being there thinking that we were going to see Punk win the title, and it obviously didn't happen. But I don't remember leaving that building feeling like, you know, we just got screwed or we were angry, but I remember leaving the building feeling like, wow, this was quite the match we saw. And, you know, Punk just came up short. So it was like, you know, the fact that Ring of Honor booked the match and Samoa Joe being so good too. And they booked that match in a way where I was a huge CM Punk fan at the time. I really wanted to see CM Punk win, but I wasn't mad about it when I left. Right. I think that says a lot about how good their booking was at the time and how good, you know, Gabe Sapolsky booked that. And, you know, I think in a lot of ways, I think a lot of companies today would have overthought that and made it either some kind of screw job or some kind of interference or some other kind of bullshit. And it goes to show that sometimes someone can just win clean and it's totally fine. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've said before on the show that I'm doing this big watch of classic ROH from the beginning onward. And right now I'm up to spring of 05. I just finished a show called Back to Basics. And you mentioned B-shows in Connecticut. That was a show that was a B-show in Connecticut. So there you go.
Have you been trying to spot my face in the front row?
I haven't spotted you yet. No. I don't think so anyway. But I'm about to watch the infamous Best of American Super Juniors show, actually, with with good old Dragon Soldier B.
Yep, I was there. And, that was Asbury Park, New Jersey.
Yeah. But Miseria Cantare. I mean, this is still pre-Summer of Punk. He's doing the Jimmy Rave feud and all that. So he still has the song. But at this point, he's also wearing the short trunks. And he's got some more muscle mass on him. And it's like, yeah, WWE is going to come calling real soon here, because, you know, he's no longer this, you know, dumpy looking guy in basketball shorts. He looks like a guy that could be actually presentable and on TV. It's fun just to see Punk's, you know, literal and figurative growth and change over time as ROH goes along there, where, yeah, Joe versus Punk the year before, it's all about respect and honor and all that, and he's a man of the people, and he's a good guy, he's a babyface, a real fan favorite. And he's in the basketball shorts, and then, you know, a few months later, and he's in the trunks, and he's beating Aries for the belt, and all of a sudden, it's the Summer of Punk, and he's Mr. Bad Guy, Ultimate Bad Guy, you know, signing his WWE contract on the belt, and all that stuff. Like, yeah, it's such a drastic change from not that long before, and John, you got to be there live for a lot of that stuff. That's pretty cool, I think, yeah.
Yeah, when I pick two of these theme songs, I'm like, I am going to flex very hard on how many live shows I've seen him, how many shows I've seen in person that were great. Because yeah, the Ring of Honor stuff, I mean, pretty much from, I'm trying to think what my first, so my first show was 2003. It was that show in Philly with the Brian Danielson, Paul London 2-3 Falls match. I think it was Epic Encounter. What's the name of it? I believe. Don't hold me to that. But yeah, that was, so that was my very first show. And I wasn't, like I said, quite going to every Philly show. Cause I remember I did not make it to the Samoa Joe, Christopher Daniels Philly show. That I think was Glory by Honor in September that year. And I was mad about it because I thought Daniels was going to win the title, which did not happen, obviously. Samoa Joe, for those who don't know, did not, in fact, lose the Ring of Honor world title in September 2003. But yeah, I remember thinking he was going to win that world title, so I was like, I was pissed I wasn't there for that. But yeah, I mean, you know, I can think of like there's two distinct eras of Punk with this theme song for me. There's the Punk that was there when I first became a Ring of Honor fan, you know, who was this heel with the Second City Saints. And, you know, when I got there, you know, when I first started going to shows, he was feuding with Raven. And yep. I was there at the Rexplex for that famous dog collar match. And, you know, I don't know if I still am. I guess I am. I don't know, a heel fan. I've always liked heels. So I was into Punk immediately, even as a heel. And, you know, obviously, so you have that distinct era. And then you have like 2004 Punk with this theme song into 2005 before the term, where he, you know, is now like this elder statesman in Ring of Honor, especially after they lost all those guys in the TNA split. And, you know, he's a babyface. So that to me is like another distinct era with this theme song. And then obviously once you get to Summer of Punk, like you said, that's when he starts switching to Cult of Personality, which ironically would be his theme song for like almost the rest of his career, you know, I mean, besides his early WWE stuff with the, whatever the fuck that song
This was, Fire but, Burns. Yeah.
There you
yeah.
go. But obviously he switched back to Cult of Personality in WWE, and he used Cult of Personality the entire time in AEW. Except for one match, which, remember when like he used this song for the dog, it was with the dog collar match with MJF, I believe.
Yep.
And like some absolute corn cobs on Twitter were like complaining about it, and like, why didn't they put together a video package to explain the theme song? And it's like, okay. I'm like, one of those things where I want to be like, this obviously sounds very elitist, but like, I'm sorry you weren't there for when CM Punk was really cool, because I don't think he was that cool in AEW at all. I mean, I'm obviously, you know, there were a lot of people that really liked his AEW run, and I thought his AEW run was fine. That's probably a little harsh. I thought it was good, but I don't know if living through the Ring of Honor stuff as a comparison point made me a little more jaded on it, but like, he didn't come off as cool to me the way he did in Ring of Honor, and it's really hard to go from being like, you know, the cool underground guy to now like the old guy coming back after, you know, whatever it was, 8 years or 9 years, and now kind of being this established figure, you know, at the top of AEW. I mean, he basically was the Rock, you know, like the guy blocking, you know, younger guys just the way Rock was for him in WWE. And, you know, it's just a very... He didn't click with me in the same way, even though I did like, you know, he had quite a few good matches, and the way he left the company to me, I don't know. I was very much on the side of the elite in that whole thing, but these are better memories, I guess, of better times when, yes, CM Punk was cool, when he wasn't weirdly eating cupcakes while screaming about Target or whatever the fuck. Definitely CM Punk's best period of his career to me. I mean, he did some good stuff in WWE too, I guess, but it's WWE, so what can you really do there?
Yeah. I'm curious, you went to all these shows. Did you buy the DVDs of the shows that you went to when they came out?
I had so many DVDs for a long time. I lost them in a move. So they're either in my dad's storage unit or they're gone. So, but yeah, I wouldn't say I bought every show, but I bought a lot of shows. So I definitely had a lot of DVDs. They also was a period, I don't know when this was. Somebody who has a better memory than me, who used to go to these shows, can probably tell you. There was a period where they raised the price of the front row tickets, and they started giving you a free DVD with your ticket to justify this. I don't know if it was like for a long time. and it maybe it was a free shirt. It was a free something. I thought it was a DVD, but I could be wrong. So that would have been another source of DVDs. And then they also ran a lot of like buy two, get one, and buy three, get one stuff. So that would be another way I would get a lot of DVDs at the time. So, but yeah, I had a ton of DVDs.
All those moments of Gabe Sapolsky yelling, "Dangerous!" just at your beck and call there for sure. Yeah. Yeah. But, okay, that was number one. John, what is music memory number two?
So music memory number two is a song by the name of "Dress for Excellence Pyramid" by Yohei featuring Aki, and it was the theme song of Dragon Gate's Blood Warriors.
In the hobby, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up thinking, maybe I can pull a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card, but with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com, the only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each one. Now, when I buy Slab Packs at Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. I was able to open an Arena Club Slab Pack, and I'll be honest, it was a lot better than what you normally do. Say you go to a card show, and there's a random innocuous brown bag of cards, and yeah, you can open it and look, it's going to be junk. You know what I mean? Like, you know what you're probably going to get in those. Maybe you find that fun, and sometimes I do. Sometimes I like just opening up cards and saying, hey, look at some random cards or whatever. But if you're really in this game to find value and find particular cards, it sucks to have to buy these mystery packs, and it ends up being, you know, almost nothing, you know, nothing of value. Not with Arena Club. You can display, again, of all available cards, hit rates, grading. So you know that when you're opening up the slab pack, you are going to get something valuable. You are getting something good. And Arena Club, in addition to having those great slab packs we just talked about, is also a marketplace for card collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying, all that sort of stuff. But those Arena Club slab packs, man, they are revolutionizing the repack game with transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed in your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. So again, setting these things off, it's going to be officially graded by Arena Club. And the Arena Club grading process is accurate, fast, and transparent, with full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. So whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. So right now, I've got a special offer here for Voices of Wrestling Network listeners. You can get 10% off of your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Now, that's a crazy offer. That's 10% off a $400 slab pack. $40 off right there. 10% off your first purchase. No matter what that purchase is, 10% off. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet, arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase on Arena Club. And we thank them for sponsoring the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. If I could have a moment of your time, I'd like to tell you about one of our sponsors, Eufy Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell, all 3-in-1, offering you triple security. So you can have everything in one device rather than installing many pieces on your front door. But it's not just for security. The Eufy Video Lock is also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys, and you can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated cameras. Some other great features we love about the Eufy Video Lock is it is easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver, no drilling required. Keyless entry, no more fumbling for keys when your hands are full. You never have to worry about kids losing keys or passing among renters. You also have 0.3 second fingerprint recognition and 1 second unlocking. Again, 0.3 seconds, it's going to recognize your fingerprints, and in 1 second, it's going to unlock. And with the AI self-learning chip embedded, the more you use it, the more accurate it will be. Also, no battery anxiety. You have a rechargeable battery in there that could last around 4 months, and you will get a low battery notification before it runs out. Passcode unlocking, a remote control with a 2K clear sight, see who's at your door, and control from anywhere through the Eufy app. With enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. You can also secure your package delivery by view and two-way audio. And then best of all, no monthly fee. A bunch of other brands out there are going to charge you a monthly fee. You have your recordings locally, and you never have to pay for storage. Customer service, Eufy's got you handled as well. They are on standby for you 24/7, so you can enjoy a worry-free experience with an 18-month warranty, all backed by their professional customer service team. Contact them anytime by telephone, email, or live chat. Personally, as a homeowner, I love my Eufy video lock. I have the ability to see what's going on when I'm not home, when packages has arrived. And really the thing I love the most about it, the ease of being able to lock and unlock my doors without having to fumble with my keys and reach in my pocket or wait, no, crap, they're in my backpack, all that sort of stuff. All this is happening while my dogs are barking at me. You know what? Not anymore with the Eufy video lock. I touch it. 0.3 second fingerprint recognition. 1 second, door is unlocked. Much, much easier. So if you want to jump on board with Eufy Video Lock, search Eufy Video Lock. That is E-U-F-Y Video Lock. Again, that's Eufy Video Lock, E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
This one, you know, I was originally, like, when I first started Voices of Wrestling, you know, I was a Dragon Gate writer, which sounds weird now because I haven't really watched Dragon Gate in quite a few years, and haven't written about it, but and my very first podcast was Open the Voices, you know, on the Voices of Wrestling Network. So I was someone who, you know, followed the Dragon system very closely from 2002. Like, when I first got into Japanese wrestling, it was, you know, pretty much... I was a big Toriumon fan, you know, at the time, you know, getting the original, like, Toriumon versus T2P tapes and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, I was following along with the Dragon system from about, like, 2002. When did I get fall out of it? Probably, like, 20... I'm really always bad at estimating. Like, 2016 or 2017, maybe. Maybe even later than that, but somewhere around. Like, whenever the heel stable changed... from Mad Blanky from Berserk to something else. I think that's when I lost track of it. So I don't even remember now the name of the new heel stable.
I believe it was Antaeus.
Yeah,
or thank Antaeus you. Or whatever it was.
So I can figure this out in 2 seconds. When the hell did Antaeus start? Let's see. Because I remember that's when I really lost touch. January 13th, 2018. Okay, so I guess it was early 2018 when I really stopped watching Dragon Gate. I was probably going in that direction already, but that's like a very clean split. But yeah, so I was a fan of Dragon Gate for quite a long time. I watched, you know, a ton of the shows. And this theme song was the theme song for Blood Warriors. So to give a little Dragon Gate history, Blood Warriors was formed towards the end of 2010 into the start of 2011. And they were, they were this amazing, like, top heel stable that kind of came together as a union of two stables. So you had the remains of the, like, what you would call the heel stable lineage at the time, where kind of each heel stable, like, bleeds in the next one. So the stable by the name of Deep Drunkards, yes, Deep Drunkards, they had lost a Unit Must Disband match earlier in 2010. I don't remember the exact date, probably September or August. And at the same time, Naruki Doi had turned on the World One group to join up with them, but they said they didn't need a name at the time. They just became Team Doi. You know, it was kind of like a you know, as like a temporary name. And Doi would constantly hint that they were building something bigger, and you know, they were gonna, they were, he said, he would say like a name isn't necessary right now. So he would kind of hint that they were building something bigger, you know, in the near future. At the same time, there was a unit called the Warriors, which was Shima's unit. They were basically baby faces. Maybe you could make a case they were like a little more neutral, but they're definitely on the baby face side. And you know, this had like members like you know, Dragon Kid, who had never been healed before, and you know, guys that had not been healed in quite a while, like Gamma, or at that point maybe had been healed pretty recently. I don't know. I'm trying to do this off of memory. The point is, the Warriors unit were not heels, and towards the end of 2010, you would have like these random masked men appearing throughout Dragon Gate. It was very wacky, but it all built to the, to a point where these masked men who had been seen in the same place as Warriors, I don't know how they turned out to be Warriors, but these masked men all showed up at one point. They take off their masks, and it's the group of Team Doi and the Warriors, and they merge together to form the unit that became known as the Blood Warriors. And the theme song itself, it's just like, it's a very memorable song to me because it's basically two separate theme songs mashed up together, but it sounds so good together that like, it sounds like that was the intention all along. I think we talked about this on the Heal Unit themes episode, where I'm just like, I don't know how they did this, where they took two songs, the Warriors theme song, which was just like this instrumental, and this song called Glitter, by the same artist, Yohei featuring Aki, and like they combine them together to make one song, which is this song, Dress for Excellent Pyramid. But like, this song sounds so good on its own that it doesn't sound like a mashup. So I don't know. Do you have any theories on how they pulled this off, Andrew? Did they already have Dress for Excellent Pyramid done and then put it in? Because that would be incredible, because the Warriors started like 2009 or something.
I don't know if it goes that deep. I mean, the intricacies of Dragon Gate are well known, of course, but I don't know if it goes that far. But yeah, I had not heard this song in a few years, and then I listened to it recently, and I was like, oh yeah, this song is really, really awesome. Like, I should listen to this a lot more. I mean, I still have no idea what Dress for Excellence Pyramid means, but...
Well, they used to form a... So when they first turn, like, revealed themselves as, like, the new top, the new heel stable, they merged together. For some reason, they all, like, formed a pyramid together, like a human pyramid.
Okay.
So the pyramid kind of became their thing. So like they would make a human pyramid constantly because they had a lot of members, obviously. So they could do a human pyramid since they were two units together. And it kind of, so like this, the other reason why I picked this, besides the fact that it's just a really dope song, is it's my favorite period of Dragon Gate. It's just such a cool period where, so this mega heel unit comes together. And like it evolves throughout 2011, where they kick some people out that don't really fit the heel leaning. Like they kick out like a Dragon Kid. People, anyone knows anything about Dragon Gate, I guess, would probably be like, Dragon Kid was a heel. Not for very long. He got kicked out pretty quickly. And you know, so they kicked out guys. They forced other stables to like react to them basically, and they made all these other stables disband, and then eventually come together to form their own mega unit, Junction 3. And then Junction 3 and Blood Warriors feuded for the rest of 2011. It was just such a cool period of Dragon Gate with like these two mega armies just like going at it. And it leads into another cool period too, when Blood Warriors becomes Mad Blanky, which is another great heel unit. But yeah, it's one of these periods where I can hear this theme song and I can see them all come out in my head. And I can think of so many great matches from that period, like Masaki Mochizuki versus Akira Tozawa for the Open the Dream Gate in 2011, which was like an amazing match. And, you know, just all sorts of stuff from that period. Like I said, like when Shima and Ricochet challenged for the Open the, Doi and Ricochet, I think, actually, for the Open the Twin Gate. Or no, I'm confusing. No, it was Shima and Ricochet. I had it right the first time. Doi and Ricochet was later on. But yeah, I mean, it was just a really, really fun period of Dragon Gate. And you just had no idea, you know, what was going to happen next, you know, leading up to the formation of Junction 3. And that just became this, like, you know, these two mega armies going head to head. It was just a lot of fun. So
Yeah, I always hear like, oh, the Blood Warriors Junction 3 feud is legendary. It's a legendary Dragon Gate feud, and I think I've seen a few matches from it here and there, but not the whole thing, obviously, which, you know, can be tricky, I think, with, you know, Dragon Gate or Japan in general, where if you don't have a compilation, or if, like, the full archive isn't on a service somewhere, you know, full feuds from back in the day could be tough to find. I mean, nowadays, for, like, New Japan World, if you want to watch the Okada Tanahashi matches, or Okada Omega, or Naito Ibushi, or whatever, it's all up there. But the older stuff from, like, you know, 10, 15 years ago or onward can be tricky to find if you don't look hard enough to get it, or if you don't have access to someone who has it themselves. So, yeah, I'm sure a lot of it's on the Dragon Gate Network. I'm sure that there are, you know, people who have it on, like, DVDs or Google Drive or whatever, but just, you know, in general, if you don't put in some effort to find this kind of stuff, you know, you might be out of luck there, John, I guess.
So the match battle I was talking about that was Shima and Ricochet, it's when they beat Dragon Kid and Pac from Junction 3 for the
opening. That's one of the matches I've seen. Yeah, awesome match. Awesome match.
Yeah, that's from Kobe World that year. Because I was confusing with a Dragon Kid with Ricochet and Noki Doi, and they would be, because they were both in Blood Warriors, but they would not become a team until they were both in, I think, World One International. So later, a splinter group later on, because the units of Dragon Gate, everybody, once, especially once you're out of it, it's like,
oh, this stuff just it flows like a river. Yeah.
Yeah, it is tough.
Yeah,
but yeah, so this is just a really cool song from, you know, one of my favorite periods in a wrestling promotion. And I don't know where you would go to watch it all either, honestly. I haven't watched it all in a long time. There were like multiple people who had Dragon Gate archives. One of them works for the company now, so I doubt he still has it up. But you know, that used to be a big source. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, he would want to ask. I'm sure Mike Spears has it all.
Likely, yeah. I think someone else I might know has it too. But anyway, time now for the third and final music memory. John, what do you got?
So this is a song. I hope everybody's sitting down for this because they're going to be really stunned. I have this song, Stardust, by, God, Kazine. I should know how to pronounce this. Kazine, I think. But it's Tetsuya Naito theme, everybody. Very shocking. So again, I'm sure everybody at home is like, John picked Tetsuya Naito's theme? What the fuck? But yes, I did pick Naito's theme song. Andrew, when I picked this one, were you very surprised?
I'll be honest, when I thought of you for this, the first thing I thought was, John's going to pick Naito's theme for sure. Just, you know, within a second, I thought, John's going to pick Naito's theme. Absolutely. No shocker there.
Do you think you knew the other two too? Did I surprise you with the other two, or did you just...
I assumed you were going to pick an ROH one just because I know you went to so many shows back in the day. So that was one that was also kind of obvious to me. And I figured you'd pick another Japan one as well. So yeah, none of these picks are shocking at all. This is all in line with who I know you to be. So yeah, there you go.
Yeah. I thought about doing Tai Chi's theme too because, again, I'm very well known.
That's another one I thought of. Yeah.
Yeah, which I love that song. And it's, you know, I just didn't want to do two modern New Japan ones, I guess. But yeah, Naito's theme song. I mean, look, besides the fact that he's my favorite wrestler ever and all that stuff, this song is just a banger. I don't know who the hell doesn't like this theme song, but like, you've been in arenas when this theme song hits. I mean, I know I've been at shows with you.
Oh yeah.
Like the MSG show.
MSG,
like,
yep.
The MSG, yeah. Like when that theme song hits, when that, like, you know, note starts, then you get the explosion, like there's nothing cooler. It's such a cool theme song when you're there live. It's maybe the best ever. But, and then obviously Naito waits for such a long time to come out. And, you know, by the time he's coming out, the song is really like in full swing. It's just one of the coolest theme songs of all time. I don't think there's any, I mean, do you disagree about Naito's theme song?
Not really. I mean, it's an amazing song. Yeah. You know, it's up there with Okada's theme and Tanahashi's and Nakamura's or whatever. Just so many, you know, high quality, iconic New Japan themes of recent years. And this is one of them, of course. I mean, we've heard it a million times as well, so it's iconic in that sense too. But yeah, this is just a great, great song.
And what's amazing to me is they actually wanted to change it when he turned heel. I mean, I assume you've heard it. They released that Stardust Tranquilo mix.
Yep.
And I'm assuming that's what they would have changed it. And the Tranquilo mix is a cool song. It's like a cool, you know, I don't mind that it exists really as a cool little remix, but it definitely should not have replaced it. They made the right call not to use it as his theme song. Because it just would have, Naito, I believe, he said the reason why he didn't want his theme song to change is because he always viewed himself as like being the same person as he was as Stardust Genius, you know, when he basically wanted to show that he was still the same person as, you know, even after LIJ formed. And I just can't imagine him coming out to anything else, you know? So, because the theme song even kind of works for him as a heel when he was like, at his most heelish, because it has that weird period where it gets kind of quiet, you know? And even if like you were mad or whatever, that like let's say you were really into Okada at the time when Naito beat him for the title, which I'm going to talk about more in a second, but you know, that like, you know, the part I'm talking about, like it kind of works as like the heel just won and, you know, now you're disappointed, you know? There's like a very downbeat part to it too that just kind of always worked, even for like a heel. But obviously, like when it comes to the theme song, besides it being an awesome theme and all that, like, you know, the memory it brings up for me is being in Sumo Hall to see him win the IWGP Heavyweight title for the first time in April 2016, and then being in Sumo Hall again the next year to see him winning the G1 Climax in 2017. And like, you know, just like the feeling I had those nights and like, you know, being in that building when that music hit and the people just being like, it's one of those things where like, I don't know if I'll ever be in a crowd again that reacts to a person the way they reacted to Naito on those two shows. And not even just Naito, because Kenny Omega too on the G1 final, like felt like, I mean, I've talked about this a lot, but like Kenny versus Naito felt like you were there for Rock versus Austin that night. I don't think that's an exaggeration. It felt like the two hottest wrestlers, like at the peak of their powers, and here they are, and they're going to fucking fight to see who wins the Great One Climax. I mean, it felt like, I really was like, this must have been what it felt like to be there for like Rock versus Austin at WrestleMania 17, because it felt like the exact same thing to me. The crowd is so into these two guys. They would like, if these two wrestlers each had told some of their fans to like get in the ring and die for them, some of them might have done it. So that's like the connection they had with the people in that crowd. So like, you know, this theme song takes me to that moment instantly. It takes me to, because obviously it plays after he wins too. Like it takes me to Naito throwing that IWGP belt in the air and like just watching that, being amazed. And it takes me to Naito grabbing that G1 Climax trophy the next year and acting like he's going to throw it into the crowd, which was one of the craziest moments. I just remember I was up in the balcony for both those shows. Way better seats, I should say, to the G1 final in 2017. We were like front row balcony versus like quite a bit high up for the title match. And, you know, like when he threatened to throw that trophy, I was basically looking straight down at him, like getting ready to take this, just fling it in the crowd and be like, oh my God. Cause like, obviously he wasn't going to do it, but in the moment watching him do it,
he's going to kill someone with that thing. What are you doing?
It looks like he's going to fucking do it. Like he did it perfectly. But yeah, I mean, just incredible moments, incredible matches. I was, you know, I've heard it live many other times too, at MSG with you, Dominion, 2019 when he won the Intercontinental title from Kota Ibushi in that like one of the craziest matches of all time, honestly. You know, and I'm sure I will hear it again live since I'm gonna I'll be attending Wrestle Kingdom next year. So, you know, I'm very excited to finally hear his theme song live again. But yeah, I mean, it's just one of the all-time best theme songs for one of the all-time best wrestlers, my favorite wrestler. And, you know, it just brings me back to being in Japan and, you know, seeing these incredible matches. So,
yeah, I mean, those memories are always going to be a lot stronger because you were there live and not just watching it on TV or on your computer or whatever. Like, you were in the building there among that crowd, in that atmosphere, in that just whole energy. It's like an extra emotional bump for the whole thing. I mean, you know, as much as I loved All Out and Forbidden Door as shows in and of themselves, they were great shows. Being there live for those two shows just puts it over the top as like these, you know, amazing wrestling memories that I'll have and cherish forever. I mean, you know, being there for All Out and just seeing that Lucha Brothers Young Bucks cage match and the Cole and Danielson debuts and Suzuki confronting Moxley and, you know, Punk's first match back against Darby Allin and, you know, Forbidden Door the next year, you know, Shibata coming out to confront Ospreay and Okada's coin drop hitting and the crowd just exploding, you know?
Now, the unfortunate part of Forbidden Door for me is because we were in a suite with an open bar, I remember that much. My memory of that is much worse than my memory of these Naito matches. But yes, from my vague, fuzzy memories, I remember having a good time.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's one of those things where as great as something is when you're watching at home, it can be even greater when you're there live. Or worse. You know, it can be a lot worse if the show sucks or whatever. But that's the risk you take when you go to a show. And lucky for us, yeah, with your Japan shows, John, and with All Out and Forbidden Door, those are great shows. So our luck held out for those two ones, for sure.
Have you ever been to a bad live show? It's a great question.
I don't think so. I mean, I haven't been to that many just in general.
I've been to a shitload, and I can tell you, I can give you one route that, because they're really, even, I used to go to like a lot of WWE pay-per-views like in the 2000s, so I'm sure I saw some like subpar shows like Survivor Series 2006 in Philly. I remember it was not that great. That was the Batista Booker T or King Booker world title, I think, main event, you know. But like, I don't have like negative memories of that show because it was still fun. It was still a live show, you know. The only show I could think of off the top of my head that I hated every second of, besides like some random like SmackDown tapings that were pretty stupid, but like the only big show was Judgment Day, I believe 2004. Whichever one was Undertaker versus Mr. Kennedy as the main event, or with the Last Ride match.
That was not Judgment Day. That was, it was...
No Mercy.
Yeah. 05, I think? 06, 05. Maybe?
Are you sure it's 05? Let's see. No Mercy.
I think it was 06.
No, okay. I had the match wrong. No Mercy 2004, Undertaker versus JBL last
time. Yes, okay, there you go. That's right, okay. That's right.
So that show was at the old Continental Airlines Arena at East Rutherford, which no longer exists, by the way. Thank God, because the arena was a piece of shit. But yeah, that was JBL beating The Undertaker in a Last Ride match for the WWE title as the main event with Heidenreich, I believe.
Yes, that's right, yeah.
The semi-main event, Charlie Haas, Miss Jackie, and Rico defeating Don Marie and the Dudley Boys. What an encounter. John Cena versus Booker T, the finals of the U.S. title best of seven. It went 10 and a half minutes. Was not very good. Big Show beat Kurt Angle. Whoop-de-doo. Kenzo Suzuki and Rene Dupree beat Rey Mysterio and Rob Van Dam in 9 minutes to retain the tag titles. The best match of the night got, again, only 10 and a half minutes. Billy Kidman against Paul London. Spike Dudley beat Nunzio to retain the Cruiserweight title. Again, only 8:44. And the opener, Eddie Guerrero up against, of course, the legendary Luther Reigns. That's what they put Eddie Guerrero in with, folks. And that match got 13 whole minutes. So yeah, that show was miserable. It was horrible. Like, everything sucked. So like, Kidman versus London could have been really good. They gave it 10 and a half minutes. Why did JBL versus The Undertaker need to be 20 minutes long? Especially if it's going to end with like a fucking Heidenreich run-in finish. Like, this is like, this show was like designed to be horrible. It really felt that way. So like, I don't know. Horrible show. It's the only show I could think of at the top of my head where I'm just like, I hated it. It was miserable. And, you know, I really wish I hadn't gone. For the most part, even like mediocre live wrestling is still live wrestling, you know? So it's still fun to a certain degree. But then again, I haven't gone to a WWE show since 2009. So maybe if I'd gone to more of these WWE pay-per-views since then, I would have a lot more negative live
wrestling. It'll balance out the scales. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. But, all right, well, that's going to do it for this episode of Music of the Mat. Thank you so much for listening. And John, thank you so much for being here. I know it was a long time coming, but we got you back on, and this was just a lot of fun, man. Thanks so much.
Yeah, I had a great time. Thanks for having me on.
Any plugs you want to give? Go right ahead.
I don't know. I don't have anything to plug at all. You can follow me on Twitter if you want to read why the fuck didn't you call this penalty ref like a million times per week. So there you go.
And Music of the Mat is, of course, part of the Voices of Wrestling podcast network. You can find all the great shows on there at voicesofwrestling.com. Follow the show on Twitter at Music of the Mat. Follow me on Twitter at Andrew T. Rich. Voicesofwrestling.com/Discord for all discussions and comments. Voicesofwrestling.com/donate. For any donations, just click the big donate button beneath the name Music of the Mat. If you donate, hey, thanks so much. You're awesome. And of course, rate, review, subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and many other places. John, thank you again, and I'll see you around.
See you around, buddy.
All right, for John Carroll, I'm Andrew Rich, and I'll see you next time on Music of the Mat. Take care, guys.
Music of the Mat is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. The songs used throughout this show are property of their respective copyright holders.
Hola, hola. My name is Ricardo. I am the host of the Lucha Jobbers podcast here in the Voices of Wrestling podcast network. We are a Spanish-speaking show dedicated to discussing and analyzing pro wrestling from all across the world. From AEW to CMLL, we talk about American wrestling, Japanese wrestling, and of course, Lucha Libre. If something big happened in the pro wrestling world, we will talk about it. So if you know Spanish or have a friend that knows Spanish or want to practice your Lucha Libre pronunciations, go listen to the Lucha Jobbers podcast right here in the Voices of Wrestling podcast network. Nos vemos por ahí.